Penguin Random House Audio presents Fear the Flames, a novel by Olivia Rose Darling, read for you by Hannah van der Vesthazen. For those who carry the weight of the world with a smile and never stop chasing dreams that others deem unrealistic, too big, or impractical, every word is for you. Your dreams are alive. And so are dragons. A note from the author. This book depicts sexual assault, off page and not between the love interests, child abuse, graphic torture, castration, physical and mental abuse, and graphic sexual scenes that are entirely consensual. Prologue. There once was a princess born on a crisp winter night with enough fire in her soul to rival the frost that covered the earth. The sky wept as she did, and the stars burned brighter when she opened her eyes for the first time. Dragons had not been seen in Rivarin since the gods walked among mortals, or so the legends say. The gods had been resting for 500 years, and yet the souls of dragons came alive and created light where there was once darkness. The princess, with hair nearly as dark as the night and eyes like two embers reflecting the fire within, was a small thing, nothing anyone would believe could alter the fate of the world. But is it not the most unsuspecting people who do the most extraordinary things? On her first birthday, the king and queen of Immerath held a celebration in honour of their daughter. They finally had an heir after trying for several years and cherished their baby wholeheartedly. Following the long-established tradition, they invited the rulers of Gaelicin, a kingdom far across the Dolent Sea, to join in the festivities. They arrived, along with their retinue, bearing dragon eggs that some would see as tragedy wrapped in a bow. The queen of Gaelicin brought her seer to issue a piece of good fortune for the child, as was their custom. The seer claimed that the gods came to her in a dream and informed her that the dragon eggs that had been passed down through generations belonged to the princess. The eggs were so old, they were considered fossils, but they began rumbling on the night of the princess's birth. When the eggs were placed before the princess, 5 vibrantly coloured baby dragons sprang free and perched around her cradle. The princess and her dragons were one. They were tethered by their souls. If the seer had stopped there, perhaps all would have been well, but not all stories have happy endings. The seer proclaimed that the princess's soul was forged from the fire of the gods, creating a link to the 5 dragons that could not be broken by any mortal or god, and that she would be either the ruination or the glory of her kingdom. The child grew, as did the dragons, and she could often be seen walking about the castle speaking to or cuddling with the tiny beasts. They slept where she slept. They ate when she ate. When she played, so did they. They were inseparable. Their love was like no other. People are often threatened by love when they realize both the absence and power of it. What is love if not the one thing in this world that defies logic? Love is the emotion that can make someone run toward danger, but those threatened by it sometimes become the danger. One day, nearing her 5th birthday, the princess threw a fit over dressing for a dinner, and her maid fetched the king. Surely he could calm down his precious daughter. But the king had become consumed by the prophecy, watching his daughter and her dragons with suspicion, fear, and jealousy. When she continued to defy him, he raised his hand to her, and the green dragon sprang forward, biting off his pinky. In that moment, the castle became a prison. Shackles were locked around the princess's wrists, and the dragons were plucked from the air and shoved into cages when they refused to leave her side. The princess fought with all her might, slicing her wrists open on the metal, scarring her for life as she dug her nails into the floor to get back to her dragons. Those who had treated her with kindness and deference became those who beat her for treason. The bond was a curse to Imarath, but no matter what happened, that little girl never saw it as anything other than a blessing. The princess was everything to her parents, until she became their biggest regret. And in the dungeons of Imarath, the happy child became a creature of darkness. She morphed into her father's personal monster, but never lost her kind heart, even if it was damaged. She gathered all the pain that was dealt to her and forged herself into a weapon that she vowed to one day turn on the kingdom, forcing them to suffer her wrath for all they had taken from her. Vengeance is a promise signed in blood, but the princess believed that the blood of the dragon flowed through her. The dragons were her kin, and there was not a line she wouldn't cross to liberate her family. Part 1. The Deal. Chapter 1. Rain and wind whip against my cheeks as I urge my horse to run faster into the dark forest with only moonlight and lightning to aid my vision. Thunder rumbles throughout the sky in tandem with horse hooves pounding the dirt. There are many reasons for a mission that requires riding through dangerous conditions. Secrecy, desperation, curiosity, revenge, and haste, to name a few. I stopped trying to dissect my intermingling emotions years ago, but can't deny the overwhelming sense of curiosity that courses through me tonight. The steep mountainside resembles a maze of fallen trees, uneven paths, and slick rocks. My cloak does little to keep the chill from seeping into my bones, and several strands have ripped free from the braid that falls down my back, sticking to my face as if they're coated in syrup. But I'll never pass up an opportunity to gain information about the tension brewing between Vereveth and Imarath. Hatred coils through me, and a grimace contorts my face when I think of my imprisoned dragons. King Garrick will pay for what he's done in blood, and even that won't be enough. The patrol I sent out informed me of a sighting of soldiers from my father's enemy kingdom, and I want to know what they're doing so far from home and travelling in one of the most dangerous parts of the continent. The Tearwind Forest is filled with beasts, bandits, and several poisonous plants, and the mist that leaks down from the mountains is enough to send even the most seasoned explorer plummeting off a sharp cliff. If you keep your wits about you and follow the faint sound of trickling river water, you'll find my kingdom, Astillion, hidden in a valley beside the Cissa Falls. Finian's horse increases its pace and strides beside mine. His ginger curls lie flat against his forehead, and his porcelain skin almost glows through the darkness. "Are you going to tell me why you ran into the house and dragged me out like a deranged goblin?" he shouts over the storm. Technically, I never told Finian why we left, but we stopped clarifying details with each other years ago. Wherever I go, he goes. Wherever he goes, I go. A deranged goblin. "Yes." He clears his throat, and I already know he's about to imitate my voice. "Finian, make haste. Get your ass on a horse. A corpse moves faster than you." His voice cracks on the last word, which only increases my laughter. "Vereveth's soldiers were spotted at a tavern here, and it's a bit of a hike for a pint." We slow our horses while passing through the weather-worn gate, their hooves sloshing in the muddy road. The scent of salt lingers in the air that wafts off the sea. I've been to this village before, but the dark wood houses, shops, and taverns look even drearier while shrouded in gloom. I follow Finian toward the rowdy establishment packed with soldiers, and we tie our horses off on a post. It's best to keep them close in case anything goes wrong. We're lined with weapons but no armor, for the sake of blending in as travelers. Knives adorn my waist corset and down my legs until they reach my boots. The only hint to my identity is the two dragon daggers I never go without.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?